Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is our annual year-in-review episode with Brett Hornig and Leah Yingling. Specifically, we discuss the following categories: Storyline of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Comeback Runner of the Year, Unsung Performance of the Year, Unsung Runner of the Year, debatable picks inside our Troy and Uroy top 10 lists, biggest changes in the sport this year, and predictions for 2024. Before we get started, though, thank you so much to NAC for supporting the show. NAC is the official nutrition partner of Singletrack because I'm a big believer in what they do and how they do it. The idea behind their products is simple. The ingestion of a single macronutrient, like carbohydrates, is not enough for the vast majority of athletes to fuel ultra distances. After a few hours of effort, you need the complete nutrition approach to go farther for longer. So many athletes are bonking in the 100K and 100-mile distances because they're using products made for shorter efforts that overuse sugar and lack critical macros. And that's the problem NAC solves. It's sports nutrition made for the ultra distances. So if you're curious, head over to their website, NAC.com, check out what they got, and at checkout, use code SINGLETRACK15 for 15% off your next order. With that, let's get on to the conversation with Brett and Leah. We are back with the 2023 year in review episode. I'm joined by co-hosts Brett Hornig and Leah Yingling. And yeah, we've got a whole list of categories to discuss here. The first one being our favorite storylines and or happenings from 2023. Starting with you, Brett, what were your favorite one or two and why?
So I was trying to go back to like 2022 and think of any storylines that I was excited for going into 2023 and if they ever came to existence or if they, you know, got even better. And I feel like nothing really, I didn't really predict anything that well at the end of 2022. I mean, everything that I ended up writing down for some of my favorite storylines were a lot of, you know, races that I got to see in person and kind of like head-to-head battles that I didn't, I don't know, maybe didn't expect. Like, you know, like even just like the obvious, like the Courtney triple, that wasn't a public triple until after Hard Rock. You know, it was always just the double, and then it turned into this mythical triple. The big one that I wrote down was the Black Canyon 100K. That was perhaps one of my favorite races to watch all year, with just how good the racing was on the men's and women's side. I mean, the Tom versus Anthony battle, and then like the Keely, Heather, Meg Morgan, Ida Nelson battle all the way through towards the very end, and being able to watch the race from like a pretty unique seat, you know, over in the Aravipa studios was pretty magical. And that really set the tone for, I feel like it set the tone for the rest of the year for the bar that got set for racing competition. And I think for the most part, most of the main races throughout the year then delivered.
I can't believe that was 10 months ago. We were all in an Airbnb. I was trying to find my ID to get back home to Salt Lake City. In addition to that being a great race. What a time flies.
Right. Yeah. You almost went to the airport 6 hours early because you just knew that you were going to get held up in a room as you tried to get back to Salt Lake. But then you magically found your ID glued to the inside of the door of the Dodge Charger.
And that's just one day in Finn's life.
That was just one day.
Yeah, like we're not even mentioning the laptop that you had to buy. Was that on that trip or was that Bandera?
That was Bandera.
That was the trip before. Yeah, I didn't. I forgot my laptop, so I bought one. Yeah.
Business expense. Leah, how about you?
Yeah, this was a fun one to think about because I really should have reflected back like Brett did on, you know, what were our predictions that we set last year, but I don't even know if that document lives anywhere on my computer anymore. Something that I did think a lot about that really did translate from 2022 into 2023 was making Worlds great again. And I don't know if there ever was a time when Worlds was extremely great, but it certainly has felt really great the last 2 years. And maybe it's because like I feel like I've never been involved in the sport more than I have been these last 2 years. But I feel like the World Mountain Trail Running Championships this year held in Innsbruck just really delivered. It was really fun to watch from home. Mike was over there shooting the race, and I just remember being up till like 4 a.m. following along on my phone. And I just think the American men's race there was so fun to follow, with Zach Miller, Eric LaPuma, and Drew Holman just being these American heroes over the finish line, going like, what was that, 5, 6, and 7. And then the American women there too. I'll get to it when we talk about some of the performances and unsung performances of the year. But I just think the women, especially in the 80K and the 40K, just were exceptional as teams working together this year. So I feel like Worlds did a great job, again, of showcasing what it can be. And I'm excited to see what the next iteration of Worlds looks like, because I think there's been so many conversations, especially as of late, about, you know, organizations in the sport and championships in the sport. And I do think Worlds has existed as that championship, and it should be celebrated as such. And I think the last 2 years, it's been really fun to see the growth of it again after a many year hiatus. So that was one of my like trains of thought. And then, gosh, live streams this year in the US. And I know for some of our international listeners, they like scoff at our live streams and think they're like horrendous and we lose service all the time, et cetera. But like, I feel like our live streams in the US especially just stepped up this year and brought races to so many people's living rooms, laptops, phones around the world, to like grandmas and aunts and everybody. And I think a lot of that is due to the work of Aravapa and Mountain Outpost. But I think just even from January last year to December, we saw a huge growth in what's possible here in the States. And I'm just so excited for 2024 to see where that goes.
If there was, so Brett, you were saying earlier about how cool this year was just based on where we got to go, like Cocodona, Black Canyon. If there's one regret I have, it's not pulling out the credit card to just go to Innsbruck and like worry about the logistics and the cost later, like partly because Mike just made it look so cool. But yeah, that was amazing. And do all the qualifying races for that happen next year, or does it all happen inside 2025, Leah, do you know, or Brett?
2025. It's all in 2025. Yeah, the Trail and Mountain World Champs.
But even the qualifier races too, like the Lake Sonoma equivalent from this past year?
I think that's 2025. I'm curious, the qualifying period, like for races you can submit on your resume, I don't know if there's a goalpost there for what you can't go back and report. Yeah. Not positive.
Yeah. Nothing's been announced yet regarding like what the races are going to be that can qualify you for Worlds, which that was a question that I had, was, is it going to end up being a good thing that we have a year gap between Worlds? Like, can this 2024 be utilized in a positive way to build maximum hype for Worlds 2025?
I'd love to see it every year. I think that'd be so cool. And it would really like give that like North Star. The Worlds race isn't till September in 2025. So I do believe like a lot of the qualifiers would be probably in 2025, because there'd be a lot of time for it. I just think that's so far off in 2025 at this point that 2024 isn't really going to be that big of a build, to be honest.
How often do the World Championships happen in track and field? Is it also on like a 4 year, or is it 2 year, Brett? What's the schedule there?
Worlds are every other year. And then with the Olympics being every 4 years, every third year, there's an off year.
Okay.
So next year we have Paris, and then finally, and then 2024. Well, there might be a Worlds in 2025. I don't know. It got all messed up with COVID and years getting delayed. I'm not sure when the next like down year is going to be, but it's a cool dynamic because you have mostly championship years, but then every once in a while you hit a year where then all people do is run for time, whereas all the other years it's like there's a little bit of running for time, but we're getting in the best shape for championship season. And sometimes time happens, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know what the exact like trail equivalent is for that, or if that even exists, but it seems to be a good dynamic.
My top storylines were pretty cliche. It was Courtney's triple and Jim winning UTMB. I felt I don't always feel patriotic, but I felt super patriotic in both those cases and just very proud that America was so well represented on the biggest stages. But I would say maybe beyond those two, I think the one that stuck out to me the most was the American men's team performance at Innsbruck with Drew, Zach, and Eric doing what they did kind of in the middle of that top 10, even without having, you know, Jim Walmsley there due to having to back out with injury, Peterman not there because of injury. So to see them kind of rally and keep the spirit from the previous year alive was awesome. And then to also see the same depth happen in the middle of the top 10 at CCC with Dakota, John, Drew, and Seth. It was just nobody outright won it in those cases, but it was just cool to see like the depth of the American contingent at two of the biggest 50 mile, 100K mountain races in the world. So those were my two other ones.
Glad to see that the depth is still deep in.
There should be a shirt. It's like, you know, those guys, and then on the back, the depth is deep or something like that. I don't know.
You can do a cool ocean graphic. For sure.
Leah, starting with you, how about rookie of the year? Female rookie of the year, male rookie of the year?
Yeah, so I'm going to preface this with, I don't know how international or not your audience is, Finn. All of my things are very North American, I would say, for most of what I was thinking through today. So I know that there were a lot of incredible international performances and almost probably too many to go through for this episode. So mine's going to focus largely on North America. But Rookie of the Year is a fun one because the way I know we thought about it last year when we had these conversations were, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be a true rookie that this is their first season ultra running. It could be a runner who has been in the sport for a little bit, but had their true breakout performances this year. And the woman that I chose for this was Priscilla Forgy from Canada. And fine. So, oh, really? I think it was Brett's too.
Yeah, that was also mine. Yes.
So Priscilla, she's been in the sport since 2019, and she won Ultra Trail Huracana in 2022, the Squamish 50-50 in 2022 as well. But I think she really came on to like more of the like general public's radar in ultra running by getting a golden ticket at Canyons this year. And I think that was like, there weren't a lot of people really projecting her to do so. And I think it was just because people probably didn't do their research. And I know, I don't even think I had her like up there in some of our conversations. And yeah, huge mistake on my part because she had an incredible race, like chasing down Ida Nielsen and at Canyons and just holding really strong. And then I had the chance to race her at Western States this past summer. And you know, I just bank on people slowing down a little bit in those last 20 miles. And man, I could not catch her to save my life. And she just had one of the best Western States debuts I've seen, running a really solid eighth place in the 17 somethings. I think she's about 3 minutes up on me and just really, really solid. I'm so excited to see what she does next year. She doesn't really over race. She seems to train pretty smart. And I think just had such a just breakout year in general this year.
How about on the men's side?
Yeah. I'm curious to hear who you guys have for this one. I have Blake Slattengren. Second at Javelina this year, 5 seconds slower than Dakota's course record. The prior course record, John right now has the course record. And also second at Gorge Waterfalls 100K from the Pacific Northwest. And I was so excited to see him race at Javelina. It was, again, a name that was a mouthful out there whenever you're not recognizing faces immediately. So it took a lap or two for me to really know who I was looking at and like who was setting such a blazing pace. But just the way he ran Javelina, like such a mature ultra runner. He's a young guy, I think 27 or 28, and now is into Western States next year. And I know I've said it on past podcasts, but just seeing him and Joe McConaughey have this like coach athlete moment during Javelina and watch it live was a really cool experience. And I think it speaks to a lot of what we all value in the sport.
Yeah. So I also had Priscilla as rookie of the year. I feel like kind of honorable mention, not a full rookie season because they've been in the sport for a couple years, but I feel like jumped up a decent amount was Shay Aquilano. Mm-hmm. Stepped up to bat quite a few times and had some pretty solid races. And, you know, I would say the year was, she started off the first half of the year probably stronger in the second half. But, yeah, that kind of what sometimes that happens when there's a lot of racing. But, you know, I think 22 years old now, probably pretty long career of racing ahead of her. That'll be pretty exciting. On the men's side, I have Dan Jones, our Kiwi friend.
Dan Jones.
Like, first full year of going, like, really all in on ultra running, especially more mountainous ultra running, and to go and grab a win at Tarawera, then fifth at States, and then be like, I'm going to go to UTMB, even though States was the most mountainous race I've done. And then to get 12th, like, that's a pretty solid rookie season. And then honorable mention, I had Christian Allen as well on the sub-ultra side of things. I mean, he raced a lot this year and was competing at, like, the highest level on actually a pretty solid range. I mean, from, like, trail 10K and VK all the way up to Speed Goat. Then he ran CIM not too long ago. And I think he ran 214, but was on 210, 211 pace through about 24 miles. He's going to be a really exciting one to watch out for in the next few years.
So I think we're all unanimous on Priscilla Forgy, because I also selected her as my rookie of the year. I think when you talk about calendar construction and you're trying to find the way to make the biggest splash possible in the sport, or to have a good barometer of where you stand against the best in the sport, choosing Canyon's 100K, Western States, and CCC is about as good as it gets. And she pretty much delivered at each race. Like you said, Leah, I think maybe, yeah, who else had as good of a debut Western States as that? Like, sub 18s, I think 1746. Amazing. Katie Schad. Yeah. Katie Schad. Besides Katie Schad, amazing, amazing debut. But even as a rookie in the sport.
Was this Priscilla's first 100 miler as well, though, at Western States?
I think it was.
So, like, not I just
think Western. She did Sinister State 7 in California. I'm not sure. In Canada. I'm not sure if that was like 120K or 100 miler.
You are right.
And then 12th at CCC, but I feel like with races like CCC, you can kind of start to consider the top 20 as like a really impressive benchmark. So Priscilla there for me. And then Brett, echoing you, but I had Christian Allen as my rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. Lee, I think you and Mike were there at Speed Goat to see him race. And that's a Speed Goat. It is another one of those races where it kind of predicts future talent pretty well, at least on the ultra trail scene. That's where Hayden Hawks kind of broke onto the scene and began his career. And Adam Peterman sort of initially got recognized in Michelin Sunset, a.k.a. Michelino Sunseri. So Helmino Faulkner, you know, so there's just like that's another good barometer race. Also won the Dirt Circus in Bentonville, won the 38K World Mountain Running Cup on Gran Canaria, third in the VK there as well, won Cirque Series Snowbird. So diversified race schedule, versatile athlete. Yeah, those are my two. How about Brett, for you, comeback runner of the year? And I'll say this before we get into it. I used the word comeback in a pretty liberal way and kind of constructed it around athletes that I wanted to build a narrative for. It wasn't like necessarily coming back from a traumatic injury. It could be psychological too. So what were yours?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what we all end up having written down for this, because it could be pretty open-ended. I mean, you could almost make an argument for like anything. The first one though that came to mind was Seth Ruling. Because he like actually did come back from like a heart condition. So that one's pretty direct, you know. I mean, and especially with that kind of heart diagnosis, like, you don't know if you're going to be able to run at a high level like ever again. And then to throw together kind of a pretty quick training block to get sixth at CCC, and then to win JFK, that's a pretty solid comeback for the second half of the year.
100% agree. I mean, you took it in the most literal way possible, and that's maybe one of the best examples.
I'm just trying to follow the rules.
How about you, Leah?
I had a couple here. So on the women's side, I was thinking about Amanda Basham. So I would say come back in the sense of like coming back to like the highest level of competition for her. And even come back whenever you think about the trajectory of her racing year. So she started off this year with a fourth place at Bandera, pretty narrowly missing out on a golden ticket there, and then went for another golden ticket attempt at Tarawera, and then raced it pretty aggressively and then fell back to eighth place there. And then soon after that, she had talked about going for a golden ticket at Canyons, but then just recognized what the early season training and just sole focus on getting into Western States was doing, like, mentally to her and physically, and that she just truly needed a break, and then switched her focus to the later goal in the summer, which was UTMB. And then I know didn't really have the day she wanted to have there, but gutted out an extremely strong and resilient 18th place there. I think under 30 hours, and then came back at Kodiak and won that, I think, running what she says was one of the smartest races she's won and run to date. So I think that's pretty cool. And I think it speaks a lot to Amanda's maturity as a runner. She is coming back postpartum after having two kids in the last couple years. Saw a lot of like early success back in like the 2016, 2017 timeframe, and still has so many years to be had in the sport. So I think just to see her mature from a couple years ago to even just like throughout the journey that was 2023 was really inspiring for me to see. And then
like on the men's side,
a slightly different angle, but it's Nick Handel from San Francisco. So I would say this is his first year. So he's really high performing in his professional life, and like I think graduated college at 19, like owned companies in his early 20s, sold his company just last year, and he's like barely 30, and focused like racing competitively in the past couple years, but like had to take a step back last year to really focus on his business. But then after he sold his business last year, dove really deep and hard into it this year, focusing largely on the 50K distance and having a lot of great success at races like Speed Goat, getting second place there, 11th place at OCC, I think Mammoth Trail Fest, Quad Dipsy. I mean, he is stellar at the 50K distance, and it's been so exciting to see him be able to take a step back from work a little bit and really focus on the running because he's so talented.
I like how we all have slightly different interpretations. That one's cool about how like these athletes took a break from running to take care of some other element of their life, which is cool. Mine are maybe more spiritual in nature. So the first one I have is a friend of the podcast, certainly a friend of Brett Hornig here, Cole Watson. If you think about what Cole Watson did at the Canyons 100K this year, he has faced heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak at golden ticket races, but he never shied away from the stage. I know that there he's talked in the past about searching for his identity in the sport at various points, but to come to Canyons 100K, on his home turf there in the Auburn, California area, get a golden ticket and get back to Western States. I just think it takes a lot of resilience and a lot of guts. So I see him as sort of a comeback performance this year when he, you know, could have maybe, I don't want to say retired, but changed focus and started competing in other parts of the sport or going down a distance. He just like stuck with it. And so he's my comeback on the men's side. And then again, this one is more spiritual, but my other one is Heather Jackson. So she had a pretty tough Javelina debut 100 last year where she was leading the race, fell off precipitously, finished fifth, but kind of a distant fifth. Then DNF'd at Western earlier this year. So there was kind of question marks around like, she's new to the sport, but has she figured out the 100-mile distance? Like what's going on there? Returns to Javelina this year, totally nails it, takes 80 minutes off her time, runs the second fastest time ever there. So again, a liberal interpretation of comeback, but like just undeterred at this distance and willing to keep experimenting. I've always seen Heather as this athlete who kind of like Jim Walmsley, like runs like fearlessly and is willing to put it all out there. And I know we all saw it at Javelina this year. It was pretty cool. So those are my two there.
Those are solid. Those are good picks.
Leah, unsung performance of the year.
Okay, let's see here. Okay, I want to do like women's and men as well because I think there's a lot of fun things to focus on. Gosh, I feel like Tyler Green somehow always gets overshadowed by some other performance in a race that he's doing, and his races are just exceptional. So I think every single race that Tyler Green has done this year has been an unsung performance in so many ways. So, you know, second place at Western States for the second time, incredible. Tom Evans beat him out by just a little bit. His seventh place at UTMB, which I think for him was a big triumph, really nailing the double this year. And then his third place at Trans Gran Canaria early this year, just really establishing himself as capable as a mountain runner and competing with the best of the best. So I think those three performances of Tyler's are quite unsung, because there's often a couple other ones that, you know, really get to shine. And I think Tyler's definitely deserved to shine a little bit too. And then on the women's side, gosh, I was just thinking the women's at Worlds were just awesome this year at the World Mountain Trail Running Championships. So Allison Baca, her sixth place finish there in an extremely gutsy race, where I think early on around mile 20, she was leading the race and people were like, who is this? And I think that was really inspiring to see. She really shines on those mountainous courses, like the harder and tougher, the steeper it is, the more she succeeds. So her sixth place finish there and Emily Schmitz's seventh place finishes there were just absolutely incredible to me. And I think, you know, the American men got celebrated quite a bit for, like, you know, how heroic their performance was and how close they were and how they finished. But I do think the American women in the 80K were pretty awesome to see too, because they were working together for, you know, the majority of that race as well.
Those are good ones. Yeah, Tyler. So he was going to be my overall unsung top performer. But yeah, Tyler, that is unfortunately the narrative that is seemingly going to stick with Tyler for his career. But he's one of the best and puts together all-time performances every year. And he's approaching 40. It's amazing. So how about you, Brett?
Kind of piggybacking off of what Leah said for the women at Worlds was Aaron Clark's Lake Sonoma this year. I feel like it's kind of forgotten about because she didn't end up racing Worlds due to injury and has just kind of had a little bit of a long road back. But that run was really impressive. Just with how, I mean, it was a good field. It was very competitive, and I hope that Aaron gets healthy and is able to, like, consistently race at that level, because yeah, like, some of her performances that she's had have been so good, but they seem to be kind of far apart. So, you know, people just kind of start to forget about them, which is a bummer. But that was definitely one. The other one that I feel like that I wrote down for the unsung performance here on the men's side is Michael McKnight's comeback at the Cocodona 250. Like, I don't care what the performance ranks to or like what the competition was. It's just the fact that anyone can have like that crappy of a first day and then by the end of like 24 hours into a race be upwards of like, what was he, 70 miles down on first place?
Well, he was in 77th place.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, he was so far back. Like, it was, if you're usually the person that wins races like that, you drop out and you try again somewhere else. But then he just raged for the next 48 hours and then finally overtook the lead. It was around like the 220 mile mark. That was just insane. That was nuts. So that's just not going to get that much credit because, you know, these 200 plus mile races, like, they definitely took a big jump in terms of viewership this year, but yeah, there's definitely, it's still a pretty niche group that's, you know, paying attention to, you know, 5 days of Cocodona coverage. But that was a very inspiring performance. And it was really cool too, that like we got to interview like his head crew chief midway through the race. He's like driving to meet, you know, Michael McKnight at the next spot. It's 2 a.m. and he's just like, I don't know, this is insane. His day one was so crappy. He had no electrolytes. And then he's just been running so fast for the last 48 hours. Now I'm driving so fast to try and get to his next crew spot, which is not a thing for a 200 mile race. But yeah, that was really fun. That was a lot of fun.
Also, thank you to Rabbit for supporting the show. Rabbit is the official apparel partner of Singletrack, and lately, as colder temperatures have set in, I have become a frequent user of their new Cocoon 2.0 advanced sweatshirt that has a built-in turtleneck that pulls up into a secure hood and breathable face mask. That is so awesome. It's also got thumbnails and watch windows to keep your hands warm without fuss, and it's got that water-resistant finish and fleecy interior for the most comfortable protection. It's the real deal. Again, winter is basically here, so go check it out. And if you're curious, if you want to try it yourself, use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout when purchasing for 20% off your order. Also, thank you to Oladance. Oladance makes headphones tailored almost perfectly for mountain ultra trail running, and it all starts with the battery life. Most of their lineup comes with 19 hours of it, which could last the majority or the entirety of a single ultra for some of you listeners out there. I've put them to the test in the harshest conditions, rain, snow, heat, cold, they always hold up. If you're curious, if you want to try them yourself, head over to oladance.com/ST and use code ST in capital letters at checkout for $30 off their OWS2 line.
Allegedly, if you believe Strava write-ups, allegedly Michael McKnight believed that the win was possible even in the darkest hours of that first day, which is amazing. The fact that he had that self-belief that, like, even in 77th place, that many miles off, that many hours off the lead, he could still do it. I know that, you know, the 200 mile scene is still very much in competitive development right now, but that was, as you said, nonetheless, super exciting to witness.
Can I add one more unsung performance? Yeah. Since these performances never get sung, so we need to sing them. is Rachel. when I was talking about Tyler, maybe think about Rachel's OCC this year. Rachel Drake's OCC was, I believe, sixth place. And this could also be kind of coupled with comeback of the year as well. Because she was less than a year postpartum doing this. And I know a lot of women take various journeys in their postpartum journeys. And Rachel ended up having a stress fracture earlier this year and just putting together a really solid block this summer and actually not having a few of her races go exactly how she wanted in her buildup to OCC, but putting all of it together and all the training and all the racing and all the miles together at OCC and having her little family at the finish line was really, really cool to see.
That's a good one. Yeah. Qualifying for two categories too. All right. Brett stole my Mike McKnight because that was such a good one. Damn you, Brett. But I listed a couple others here. First one being John Ray. I'm not sure if this is unsung. It's probably sung, but I'm going to say it's unsung. I think that if we had a second half of the year award, John Ray would win it. The course record at Javelina, only 7 or 8 weeks off of fourth place at CCC. And there were a lot of question marks, in my opinion, because, you know, he obviously trains kind of high volume, did some pretty wild stuff, pre-Western States, finished and, you know, ran a solid Western States, but like we all thought that he was capable of winning that race. So it's like there was some left to be desired, but great second half of the year and felt like, you know, that deserves more kudos. I don't think Zach Garner is quote unquote garnering enough attention for his course record by over 30 minutes at the Bear 100. That was amazing. And if anyone wants Strava entertainment, I strongly encourage you to go check out Zach Garner's Strava, which seemingly defies a lot of the laws of exercise physiology and training principles. It's amazing. And then my last one is Dave Stevens, running 7 minutes off the course record, I believe, on a slightly changed course at Run Rabbit Run, but still impressive nonetheless, 17:22. If there was one guy in the sport that I wish, like, Singletrack had the ability to sponsor and, like, help get him to more frequent, higher-profile races, it's Dave. I think all three of us knew how in shape Jimmy Elam was heading into that race, like, the work he had done. And, you know, Dave beat him by a healthy margin, and Jimmy's one of the best 100-milers in the sport. So, yeah, I would love to see Dave at like a Western States or even just more of these higher profile mountain races like UTMB. But yeah, those are my three ads. Leah, you stole my unsung top performer of the year, which was Tyler Green. But who made your list here?
Oh, let's see here. I have Drew Holman. I know we last year when we were in our like you Roy conversations, we all had Drew in our top 10 and then seemingly, you know, you Roy voters don't listen to us. Why would they? Drew was not in the top 10 last year, I don't believe, but yeah, Drew Holman needs to be sung from the rooftops. He's amazing. Won Lake Sonoma in a very similar race that Brett was talking about, how Aaron Clark won Lake Sonoma this year. Also got fifth place at Worlds, fifth place at CCC. And like Drew just doesn't miss. He's always solid. He's always consistent. And he always gets the most out of himself too. And I love to see people really go to the well when they're racing, and Drew's one of them. And I think this has to do with 2022, but after going out to UTCT this year and just seeing how like technical and rugged that course is, I never would have thought Drew would be a like incredible technical runner by any means, just living on in Boulder, where it's a little bit on the cruisier side. And that just gave me so much respect for Drew's race there last year, being able to see the course myself this year. So Drew can do it all. And I think he showed that in so many ways by his success at all the races he did this year.
Surely he makes the top 10 this year.
He better.
If he doesn't, I quit. I hope.
Drew Roy.
How about on the women's side, Leah?
I had Roy. Helen Mino Faulkner, which I don't know if she's unsung or not, but she seems slightly still under the radar despite the year she just had. One speed goat in a time that was quite close to the course record, one broken arrow, third at CCC, and then won the UTMB Argentina race. She's again hasn't really had a bad race this year. And I think we're just seeing her get better and better. And I think Hoka noticed that this past year after she was sponsored by the North Face earlier in the season and then moved over to Hoka midsummer. So I think she's going to do Leadville next year. And I believe Transvolcania, I saw her post about the other day. So that looks like it's going to be a pretty interesting race year for her.
Leadville?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had Tyler Green. And I guess the one race I'll emphasize is his third place podium at Trans Gran Canaria. There might be some people out there that think he's sort of a role player in the sport in the sense that he can kind of recycle these great performances at Western States. But I think the Trans Gran Canaria performance coupled with the UTMB performance shows that he is versatile AF and can kind of compete on any stage, on any scene. You know, as the great Sage Kennedy once said, any surface, any distance. Tyler Green there. And then agree about Helen Mino Faulkner. Amazing range this year. Kind of cool that she did the Broken Arrow Speed Goat double into CCC and was high performing at all three. This would go into predictions for next year, but one matchup that I would like to see as often as possible, and it doesn't seem like it's going to happen, but I would love to see as many times as possible Helen Mino Faulkner and Jen Lichter face off in like the mid-distance ultra battles, like the 50k, 50 mile, 100k mountain racing scene. I think that'd be really cool. It'd be entertaining. And so those are my two there. How about you, Brett?
I just have one written down. And it's just pretty much anything Claire Banworth did this year. she's going to get some votes for, you know, like Trail Runner of the Year just from the sheer number of miles that she raced, both sanctioned and unsanctioned races. But and she wasn't just finishing this race. She was racing them hard. Like at Hard Rock this year, she was in the like medical cots for like 10 hours after she finished. I didn't know who that was at the time because I like finished doing a like commentating stint, walked down into the gym, saw someone like laying there rolled up in blankets, like went for a run, ate food, took a nap, came back for another commentating stint. Still there. And I was just like, is this person gonna be okay? And then like the next week, just bangs out another monstrous race, Colorado Trail, Tahoe 200. Like it was, yeah, it was just, and then I started following and I was like, oh my gosh, she's done so many races already this year before Hard Rock. So you're still able to see on Free Trail for the voting. If you click the person, you can see like the voting's closed, but you can go through and check the people. Go look at Claire's profile and just look at the race results there. And the shortest race was the Montreux Trail 2023, and that was 20 hours 39 minutes. That was the shortest one, with the longest being 97 hours, the Montaigne Winter Spine Race.
I think the icing on the cake for me, for her, was seeing her run 29 hours at UTMB. On top of all of that, to put together a pretty solid UTMB, like, I don't know if that was good for like 15th-ish place, but really impressive.
Yeah, so that's my unsung everything of the year.
We are not going to go through an exhaustive discussion of 1 through 10 in Trail Runner of the Year or Ultra Runner of the Year, but I did think it'd be interesting to each say one or two names that would maybe either be on the bubble or be some sort of interesting, like deep into the top 10 pick, and explain why. Maybe starting with you, Brett, are there any people that like Drew Holman, for example, are really deserving of a spot there or on the bubble that are worth discussing?
So here's a question that I wrote down, and this is kind of pertaining to like Free Trails Trail Runner of the Year, which is all the trail distances. Is there any argument why on the women's side it's not Courtney DeWalter at number one?
No.
Like, no.
Is there any argument for that? I was trying to play like devil's advocate and be like, maybe you guys have something. And I just feel like it's got to be pretty unanimous. The other one was, and I feel like this one's going to be more split, is for the T-Roy, Jim or Remy? Or neither. I feel like it's going to be kind of split, and there's great arguments for both. They both had really good years, and both had some like pretty explosive like single performances.
The only thing I would say about Remy, and this is just what I'm hearing, people are kind of putting in my ear, making me think about, is with the Pikes Peak ascent, he took that record on the ascent only. So obviously Matt Carpenter ran the full marathon with that time. So there's like, people want to put like an asterisk next to that performance because it was just up and not up down.
Yeah, but like, there's still so many people that tried to do it in the same format that Remy did, and everyone's failed.
Right.
So it's right. Like, at some point,
no, that's, you gotta, that's my logic
just on the way up. But then like, we're dipping a little bit into Long Run Archives right now, but can Jim Walmsley break that Remy's time at Pike's Peak? Jim's a really good hill climber. And like, he's never really just like tried something like that.
I believe.
I think he could, but I feel like he would have to dedicate an entire year to doing just like those types of things.
He'd have to not be an ultra runner. I don't think he'd be able to just like do one training block and do it. But I think if he dedicated a whole year to it, I think we could see a sub two out of Walmsley on that thing.
I think when you see what we just saw on Rim Trim Trim with Zach falling about 20-ish minutes short off of Jim's record there, it shows, especially in the ultra trail world, how sort of in a league of his own Jim is in terms of like versatility across all distances. Like he's kind of himself at every single distance. He is him. So except for like, you know, maybe Killian, like he, and sometimes I'll even say Aurelian, but like I think Jim could do it, but yeah, I mean, like, it would require, like you said, Leah, a ton of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cause like Remy took down a Matt Carpenter course record. Jim took down a Killian Jornet course record. Who's better, Matt Carpenter or Killian Jornet? I'll leave that one for the audience to debate about.
How about picks? Any names you want to shout out? Like if you were a UROY voter, for example, how would you, are there any names that you would really be lobbying for any particular reason that like aren't obvious?
I mean, the obvious one that is seemingly so not obvious is Drew Holman.
Yeah.
First of all, it's Drew Home Run.
It's Drew Home Run. That's true. Was this the best year of racing of his career?
I think so. Last year was pretty close too, though. Like he had a great Western State. He had a good UTCT.
The UTCT looks even better now that we've seen people like, you know, Caleb and Anthony race there. Were there course changes though after last year? Or was it the same course?
Same course.
Yeah. An amazing, like an even greater performance with context.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some people, like, this is more of like my like second half of my top 10 for the women, and just trying to think about like how they would be ranked more like amongst each other is interesting in my mind. But I have like Anna Cassius, Lottie Brinks, Tara Dower kind of in the mix. And I think they've all had success at slightly different races, and trying to like put them head to head a little bit to be like, oh, who would, you know, in theory rank above the other person is a pretty interesting little thought experiment. Anna has had some great success this year at the flatter, faster races, like the Kauai 50 miler. We just saw an incredible course record at the Javelina 100K. I think taking down a Lottie course record by over 20 minutes. And then also running fourth at Black Canyon this past year. So just incredible, some versatility on, you know, some trails like Black Canyon, but then also the flat stuff as well. So excited to see her give Black Canyon another attempt in February. And then Lottie too. Lottie races a good bit and always is performing well, like never really has a bad day, and raced a good bit this year. And I think probably her best performance was her Grindstone win in Golden Ticket in September.
I guess this would kind of qualify, because I've been thinking about this for Tara Dower as well, but as I'm thinking about especially the back half of the URI top 10s, like 5 through 10, I start to think, are there any non-traditional or like non-superstar level type races, or, you know, combinations of races where if you did well there, you could still be considered? And like one of those, like, for example, Caleb Olson is one that's interesting for me. Like, I don't think he'll be in the T-Roy rankings just because of the inclusion of subultra and stuff. But like in the U-Roy voting, you know, he's got the Lake Sonoma podium, Grindstone win, Cape Town podium. I wouldn't say any of those three races are necessarily like A tier races. They're kind of like B plus A minus tier races, but all very impressive. And like, where does he fit? Cause in my mind, he could be in the top 10 in that like 8 to 10 range. But like, does he have the strength of race schedule, and do people like Tara Dower have the strength of race schedule? Like that stuff gets really interesting to me.
I agree.
Well, Caleb did run Tushers as well.
And Tushers.
So that's the strength of race.
Make Tushers great.
Pushes it into the top 10 for Caleb.
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation too, because then it's like, okay, say somebody has good performances at those like A-plus races. Do they get ranked higher just because they had the privilege of being at those competitive races? Yeah, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like how many people are in the top 10 for U-Roy on the men's and women's side this year that did not have Western States or some race in the UTMB World Series final on their resume?
Tyler Lewis.
Yeah,
I don't have him in mind. Probably should.
Top 10.
Caleb, I have Caleb as number 10, for the record, and he's the only one who didn't have a UTMB race, but I get, or Western States.
Interesting.
And then women, there's a couple. Yeah.
All right, Leah, starting with you here, we're kind of coming back full circle. Like we talked about storylines at the top, but how about biggest changes in the sport, in your opinion, this year? Could be anything. It could be, like you said, live stream related. It could be performance related, athletes, anything.
Yeah, there's so many changes this year, guys. Yeah. And like overwhelming ones at that.
The changes have changed.
Yeah, I would say from like a professional athlete perspective, this was like, I'd say the first year the PTRA, like the first full year the PTRA was in action. Ooh, and making some specific changes. You know, having conversations with UTMB, having conversations with other big race organizations about structure, you know, implementing different maternity clauses here and there. So I think we're starting to see where collective action can take us at the professional level of the sport. And I think we're going to continue to see that to grow, especially as there like just becomes more controversy in the sport as well. Seeing the PTRA play a little bit more of a pivotal role and giving more voice to the athletes. I think we saw a lot this year. I think we're going to continue to see a lot of that next year as well.
That's a really
these ones are like little surface level, but I'm kind of sad about getting rid of Bandera as a golden ticket race. However, on the flip side, I'm happy that the East Coast got Grindstone as a golden ticket race. After losing Georgia Death Race, kind of rightfully so a few years back, I've been wanting to see the East Coast get a golden ticket race back. So I wish Bandera would still exist because, man, Bandera is a pretty cool, funky race in January, and nobody's really going to that neck of the woods in January for anything other than running the Bandera 50K or 100K. So, yeah, it's a little near and dear to my heart and a little sad to see, but that was a change.
It's super sad to see golden ticketification happen at these races and the aftermath that follows. It's like seeing deindustrialization in these old mill towns, Main Street.
Yeah. And I know we've had some conversation online about this, but like a few years ago, the golden ticket chase was really fun to follow from like a January forward perspective. You know, everybody had their off seasons, they're hunkering down. And then, you know, January really marked the golden ticket hunt, which started at Bandera, at least from like, you know, the last several years of following. And then now with how golden tickets are dispersed, like it's dispersed. And, you know, the golden tickets start being given to athletes at UTMB races like CCC and then, you know, Javelina and Nice, things like that. So makes it a little bit disconnected and maybe not as easy to follow. And maybe you don't get as passionate about different storylines on the golden ticket hunt anymore, because the one that really comes to mind is like Emily Haugood's golden ticket chase back in like 2021 timeframe, where she, you know, failed at Bandera, failed at Black Canyon, and then finally got it at Canyons. And that was just such a special journey to follow. So hopefully we can get a little bit more of a trajectory in the coming years. But I do think kind of how we're seeing golden tickets dispersed is kind of leading away from that.
Yeah. Bring back the season of golden ticket racing. Yeah.
This was my number one talking. Leah, you said it perfectly. I guess I'll just elaborate a little bit. Someone said it in Discord. I think it was Alex Bond. He said that I missed the era of golden tickets between 2017 and 2019. That was sort of like the golden age of the American golden ticket scene. And, you know, for people that are listening, they're like, okay, but there's reasons why we don't do it that way. I totally get the internationalization of this stuff. I totally understand making it easier for people on the Asia continent or the European continent to get into this race. But I miss having five or six races in a very discreet, like tightly packed season. And I think I have a solution for the international thing. I think similar to Dale's picks, we should have Craig's picks. And in place of those Ultra Trail World Tour selections, we can just have like Craig's picks where it's, you know, three international women, three international men, call it a day, and then restore order on the American golden ticket landscape. And I really wish they, I do think there is something to be said about consolidating it between January and April, and then including Brett's idea of like the last chance 50K in May.
The LCQ. Forgot about the LCQ.
How could you forget about that?
At the Silver State 50K. And only eligible to race if you had already run a prior golden ticket race in that season.
I love that. That needs to happen.
Oh, that's so good. It's so good.
The last one I'll say, and Leah, you talked about this at the top of the episode, but the expansion of live streams this year was amazing. And it was a heroic effort on Aravipa's part, not just to do live streams on their home turf of races, but to offer their services to Hard Rock and Run Rabbit. And maybe one of you has this as part of your predictions, but it would be interesting to see if Aravipa doubles and triples down, and if there's, you know, more non-Aravipa races that they add to that live stream schedule, and how many more races in our sport in 2024 have, you know, more holistic media presence. So Brett, how about you?
Yeah. The biggest changes in the sport this year, I said, this was the year of the live stream gold rush, where you
get your pickaxes, you know, get your shovels.
Yeah. You stake that claim. You claim that stake, whichever way you do it.
We're known as the 23ers.
Yes, exactly. And they were really fun. I mean, they were pretty, I mean, they were kind of like bare bones in terms of thinking about it in relation to other professional sports and how they broadcast, you know, their events. We're like I mean, ultras take a long time. That's one of the interesting parts of our sport. So these live streams take a long time, and they're massive efforts by small teams to talk about running for many, many hours and keep it exciting. And this year was a really good one for those live streams. I mean, like, we had no idea what we were getting into for Bandera. It's hard to believe that we're in that same year. Because I was like, what are we like? Oh, yeah, I did commentary for my first race ever this year. Whereas I feel like I'm a veteran of it now, even though it's actually still technically been less than 12 months. So I'm curious to see where it goes. Like, for Aravaipa, like, do they expand to even more races next year? Or do they do the live streams that they're already doing, but just make them bigger? Better. You know, bigger and better. You know, Aravaipa, I see them, they're going to turn into basically the next Red Bull, where they started out doing something, but then they just slowly transform into this super badass media company. And then it's like, remember when they used to like put on races and sell race entry fees?
When they made drinks? Remember when they made Flota?
Exactly. Like, remember Flota? And now, like, you know, Jamil's like yelling, you like t-shirt cannon from a blimp or something like that. I don't know. That was one. And then I also wrote down that UTMB made some pretty questionable moves that stole the spotlight in the second half of the year.
Oh, man.
So I guess it didn't really change the sport this year, but I'm curious to see what happens in like the future years.
Agreed. And I'm curious, like, how far spread is the backlash? You know, I think sometimes we're in a North American bubble and it feels very North American centric where all of our anger is right now. But, you know, going abroad a couple weeks ago, it's not quite, you know, everywhere. Like, not a lot of people share the same sentiments. And if they do, it's on a much lesser scale. So, yeah, I'm just very curious, what the outcome will be as we roll into 2024. But I agree, just the UTMB takeover / backlash this last year, and then coupled with then World Trail Majors coming onto scene and proposing another structure for next year is, definitely a pretty cruxy time in the sport right now.
I will say, typically, like, October onward, there's a lull in the racing scene and you're kind of grasping at straws for talking points and content. We did not run out of content this fall. We had plenty of content. Many, many long run archives and other discussions were born out of the UTMB blunders. So thank you for the content.
This used to be the time when Finn would just post his Twitter hot takes. October, November.
Didn't need to. They stole the spotlight.
And, you know, next month, we get to start talking about like contracts and who's signing with who. Cause totally. You know, we're about to, I'm sure we'll see a lot of changes for, you know, in that January, February timeframe. So I'm really curious to see who goes where. That's always a fun one to talk about during our off season.
Last section here is predictions for 2024. And I think I'll go first on this one. I think this is a wild one, but 2024 is the first year a female runner starts lap 5 at the Barclay. I'm not going to say whether they finish or not. I'm just going to say that at the very least they start lap 5. I also say this again for anyone that thinks about conspiracy theories, there's no conspiracy here. I say this with zero intelligence of who's going back. It's pure assumption. Like, I don't know if Jasmine Paris is going back. I have no idea. Or Courtney DeWalter. I have no idea. Like, I'm just whoever is in the women's field, one of them is starting lap 5 this year. That's my bold prediction.
Nice. I agree with that.
That's a solid one. That's pretty direct. Like, I'm glad that you like pinpointed one particular race. Now I feel the need to throw out like an equally as hot of take. Yeah. So I'm just going to like off the dome, pull a Finn Melanson and just say it. Jim Walmsley does not win Western States in 2024.
Oh my gosh. That's the clip. That's the clip for this episode.
Who's going to beat him? I mean, I can name a few people that I know could compete. Like, actually, though, I can count some numbers, and it's going to be good. So someone's going to beat Jim at Western States this year.
Well, I just got one upped.
Leah, what do you got?
I'm not even going to go.
Leah, you have to follow those two acts. What do you got?
I got nothing, guys. Well, now mine are so boring. So these are predictions for 2024. Okay. I said UTMB will still be massively competitive.
I also had a UTMB thing written down.
Yeah, I just don't think we're going to see as many athletes I think a lot of athletes will still be standing by, you know, the North American support that we've seen, but I think we'll see them still going to race UTMB races because incentive structures aren't changing, the competitive nature of athletes, the competition isn't changing. And I think at the end of the day, that's why athletes go to the UTMB races.
All right. On that topic, of these three names, how many return next year? Jim Walmsley, Courtney DeWalter, and then not return, but race this year, Killian Jornet.
To UTMB?
To UTMB.
Oh, I don't think any of them.
I think none of them.
Yeah.
That's what
But I also think anybody who's had the success that they went to at UTMB has less incentive to return.
Yeah. Fair. All right, that's a good prediction. That's a bold prediction too. I think that we each offered bold predictions. That's good.
I said UTMB takes a dip in competitiveness this year or in 2024. But Leah, kind of like you said, it might just bring in new talent. We might not see as many UTMB veterans, but does that mean the quality of the field will go down? Not necessarily. I mean, that's just how good our sport's getting.
Yeah. All right, maybe one last one. Pick one personal highlight from 2023 for each of us, starting with you, Leah. What was your personal highlight this year?
Oh.
Or one of them. One of them. One of them.
Crewing Mike for Grindstone 100 was exceptional. I think it's really enjoyable and satisfying to see someone you love have the day you know they've been working extremely hard for and who's been your biggest cheerleader for months and years on end and suffering their fair share of hardships. So being able to be the smallest piece of his extremely successful day and not get dropped was awesome. And I don't even have the words for it because it was emotional and it was everything. And just, it was amazing to see Mike just put it all together and just gratifying, really.
Unsung performance of the year. Shit in the woods.
Mike's a really good 100-mile mountain runner. Watch out, people. Watch out in 2024. I'm curious to see that calendar construction. I'm curious to see what he builds around Western States.
I'm not going to show you the current version of Mike, though, who's post-back injury, post-stomach bug, post-upper respiratory infection, and current COVID. So I'm not going to show you that.
But can we throw the Mike McMonagle 100-mile stat out there? What was it, however many hundreds he's done. It's he's either won them or not finished them.
He's done the last six. He's rotated between winning them and DNFing. So he is currently 10th on the Western States waitlist for next year, and he just DNFed his most recent 100-miler. So on his Instagram story, he said he only has one option.
So facto, didn't I just say Jim Walmsley is not going to win Western States 2024?
You heard it here first.
All right. I have two highlights. One was I was participating, one I was observing. The observation is I felt like 2023 was one giant leap forward for nationwide and global notoriety for the Salt Lake City trail running scene. Leah, I think you spearheaded that effort. Anthony, Caleb, et cetera, Anna, Jimmy, the list goes on and on. That was really cool. And I think that it's only going to get better this coming year. And then the second one for me was doing the Cocodona live stream with Brett and just hanging out all week, putting in pretty good week of running in the Grand Canyon, talking 7 hours a day for 5 days straight. And had a blast, hung out in Flagstaff. So that was probably my favorite. Yeah. So those are my two.
Yeah. Cocodona was definitely, that was one of those, I wrote down like five, but the one that is at the top of my list was the Western States coverage week. Just not only, I mean, I know the work that it took to get that week to even exist. And, you know, just the amount of effort it took to get all of those moving pieces together and then to actually execute on all of those interviews and all of those live shows and put on group runs. Like when we were pitching this idea, it's like, oh, cool. Like, have you guys done this before? And we're like, nobody's done this before. And that's why it's going to be great. And for, you know, companies to take a chance on us and let us try this idea that ended up just being so fun. And then the team of photographers and videographers, Finn, that you put together and just all living in the Airbnb for a week. It's, you know, like the incubator. I mean, just no sleep.
Aviato.
Everyone's doing everything. You know, Ethan had his just big ass computer with this 600-inch monitor on a dining room table.
I took up the whole Airbnb.
It was so cool. It was so fun. And then for just all of that to work, and over the course of the whole week, people were like, "Oh, I've been, you know, watching your stuff, and now I have someone new to root for the race." The freaking watermelon, you know, like that ended up.
And doing the squats with the Cougar Trophy, Western Weights.
See, there's just so many good things that came out of that week. And like, and Western States deserves, you know, coverage like that. The race is always so good that they deserve coverage of the week leading up to the race to build the hype.
I hope we can do it again.
The race. I would love to do that again. And then the day of the race as well was, you know, also just insane. But shouts to Jeremiah over at
Jeremiah. Michigan, if you're first of all, thanks to Leah and Mike for making that connection. But then just Jeremiah, and we got to play football with Jeremiah for like 6 hours. It was incredible. Dude's a great quarterback.
He could throw a football over the mountains. That's amazing. Playing football, like getting to use his kitchen as just Western States battle station. Even going back to the Memorial Day training runs, like probably perhaps one of the greatest brainstorming sessions ever for golden tickets.
We can't talk about any of those ideas on this podcast, right?
Well, I think the last chance qualifier idea might've come out of that, out of Jeremiah's house, but
okay.
That's the only one that we're talking about. So yeah, Western
States. I've been told there were amazing ones.
There were some really good ones, but so that was just a special week. And then just to see it all work and, you know, in my eyes be a huge success. And then also getting to watch the race, you know, live and just kind of spectate it was really fun too. You know, Leah, you got your feet cleaned by an ice bandana at Michigan Bluff.
And I was so mad about it.
that's one of the best pictures ever. So that was a big highlight for me, for sure.
Awesome. Last one. The data says this is typically the most listened to episode of the year. At least last year, this episode was. So are there any plugs either of you want to make? Leah, any Lululemon initiatives? Brett, any CP or Trails and Tarmac initiatives? Say them.
Yeah. Before I say that, Finn, what's the next race you're doing?
Oh my gosh. So I am signed up for the Cocodona 250, and let me tell you the stakes that are here. If I don't start and finish this race, Jules is divorcing me. So there's a lot.
Oh shit, that's pretty big. Oh my gosh.
Okay. We gotta finish the thing. 2024 is all about starting 2024. My goal is to start a race.
So nice. Jules either has 100% confidence in you or zero, and she won't
know. Maybe this is actually how she's trying to exit the relationship.
I believe in you.
This is my out.
Cocodona 250 just got interesting.
Yeah, Jules knows what she's doing.
But I will say this, since this episode will get a lot of listens, I love the Cocodona 250 so much, and you know, I'm just an average Joe, but hopefully we can use this platform a little bit to make that race even cooler, because I effing love that race and I love hiking, and there's going to be a lot of me doing that there. So yeah, super stoked on it. And for a lot of people, I have to start this race, especially myself. So we're starting this thing and we're finishing this thing, and I'll see you in Flagstaff.
Perfect. That's all I needed to hear. Okay. Yeah, Lululemon. What a just honor this past year has been being a part of everything that they've put together. And especially for what we're able to do in our local community here with the Women of the Wasatch. So I know Jules has been a major part of this, but putting together the Ready Speaker Series that we put on in partnership with Jared Campbell's organization, Running Up for Air, where we've been able to bring in, you know, a plethora of incredible women speakers so far. Hillary Allen, Jennifer Farr Davis, Kylie Halpin, just a whole series of incredible people, and even better ones coming in 2024. Really excited for that. So yeah, really grateful for their partnership. Excited for my 6-day ultra marathon that I'll be doing come March as a part of the Further initiative. Both terrified and excited, and Brett's going to be one of my crew members, so it's going to be a good time.
Can you say anything more publicly at this time about the nature of your mission there?
Yeah, I mean, so far, like, what I can share is people will be on a looped course, and the goal is to go as far as I can over the course of 6 days. It's going to be me alongside of 9 other incredible Lululemon ambassadors from around the world, and we're all going into it likely with extremely different goals. So there might be somebody who, you know, just started running last year. Their goal might be to do 20 miles a day, 50K a day, something like that, and really getting through that with, by the help of their crew, the organization, and just the other women out there doing it. I don't know exactly what my goals are yet. I might go after a 24-hour kind of like mileage target and then keep doing what I can for the rest of the 5 days. We'll see. But I've got about 10 weeks till that. It's early March. So it'll be a nice way to bust some of the winter blues over here in Salt Lake.
And we'll, once links become available, we'll make sure to share that on the Single Track channel so people can follow along. Will there be like any live stream component or any media during the week?
Yeah, there likely will be. There's going to have, it's a closed event, and there'll likely be definitely like some portion of media that will be able to follow along. Should be very cool. I'm excited to see like what Camille and Devin and a bunch of the other women are going to put together, because I think, yeah, there's definitely some people going after world records out there and American records as well.
How about you, Brett?
Did you get into way too many races this lottery season? Were the lottery gods seemingly too friendly to you? If so, and you feel overwhelmed with your current training and you might need a coach, head over to trailsandtarmac.com to see if one of our coaches is right for you. If you mention that you found us on the Single Track podcast, you will get $30 off for each of your first 3 months of coaching. That is trailsandtarmac.com. And if you're like, oh my gosh, I have so much running to do, what shoes should I wear? Head over to Conversational Pace on YouTube and check out Finn and Brett talk about trail shoes, because that was another new thing for the year, was starting this trail shoe review channel. And that's actually been really fun. And I feel like this was an overwhelmingly successful first year, and I'm so excited to continue to grow Conversational Pace off that. You know, we've got so many fun shoes for 2024, and then also, you know, like kind of capping off the year with the running event as well. Getting to do some previews and stuff, but those are my plugs.
For the Trails and Tarmac, I thought you were going to do like a Men's Warehouse ad, where it's like, you're going to like the way you train. I guarantee it.
No, I think I'd rather go for like some sort of like Patches O'Houlihan dodgeball quote. Yeah. It's like, I get better runs in my shorts.
All right. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. This was our 2023 year interview episode. Looking forward to seeing what transpires in 24 and what we have to say at this time next year.
Before we go, thank you so much to Kodiak Cakes for supporting the show as well. Kodiak was the OG believer and I think the first ever sponsor of Singletrack. It's been going on 2 years now. They've been an amazing partner and they make great products too. You've heard me rave about the pancake mix, but it certainly does not stop there. I'm a big fan of their oatmeal power cups as well as their granola bars. If you're curious, if you want to try some yourself, head over to their website, check out what they got, including their recipe section, by the way, which is an amazing place to add some creativity to your Kodiak Cakes culinary journey. Grab some goods, and Kodiak Cakes has a special discount for Singletrack listeners where you can use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout for 15% off your next order. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Singletrack. See you in 2024.